everyone. Welcome to the Track and Poop Podcast. You're joining us on another lovely Wednesday afternoon. I'm hanging out today with my buddy Mickey McLeod. I'm your host, as always, Jamie Ma. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you? I'm feeling recovered from Sunday.
Yeah. Sort of. You did a little DJing this weekend.
I did. Got on the decks, threw down a little bit. It's pretty good.
Mammy Taylor's party.
So yes. So for people listening, there was a little shindig at Ron Oliver's, friend of the show. Delicious restaurant, Mammy Taylor's, tiki themed, blue margaritas, some food. I don't know because I'm a vegan, so I didn't eat the food. But it was dope time, really good. Lots of Hawaiian shirts,
pina coladas,
which you love, your little guilty pleasure. I'm just fully recovered just this moment, actually, because we're sipping on a delicious, delicious beer.
Yeah, we have already got started with beer,
but like, I'm good. It was super fun, and we should say thanks to everyone who came out to support. Had a lot of friends come down. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Clinton. Came down, took some social media stuff of me, because you know how I love fucking social media. And it was good time. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Me, on the other hand, I'm a little bit rugged today. I'm starting.
You do. You sound sick, bro.
I'm feeling a little bit fluish, so I'm going to bear through this one today. But I didn't want to cancel because we have a great guest on today. We're very excited to be sitting with Sam Payne, the owner of Parkside Brewery up in Port Moody. How are you today, Sam?
I'm well, thank you. One of the owners, and I was at that party on Sunday. It was good. I was reminded I was there, and I had a nice time.
So I think as we were just talking before we went live here, Sam was saying that where I live, which is just right around the corner from Mammy's in Chinatown, you're basically elaborating that this is kind of a danger area for hanging out in Vancouver.
Well, so. You got Mammy's, of course, by proxy, that's the first place. Then you got the American, you got Boxcar, you got Juniper, Bao Bay, Bodega. We live in a real cultural hub here in Chinatown.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah. I live in Carisdale, so I don't get out much.
Yeah, Bufla. Bufla's lovely. Yeah.
Port Moody. You live in Port Moody?
I live you pass the like welcome to Port Moody sign and go about two blocks and you take a left and I live there.
We're on the border.
Hey, I got a list of questions. don't get to
I guess that's not as far as Carisdale, so
anyways, we're very excited to be talking with Sam today. He's going to talk to us about his great beer company that we have been very excited to talk about. I've been very curious because we actually pour his beer at the Fairmont.
Parkside's on the Fairmont.
Yeah, we pour his Parkside Pilsner.
It's great.
Very, very popular beer for us. But I also just love the branding, the company. Mm-hmm. Everybody that I always talk to about this, you guys loves the company, and I've always wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit more and learn a little bit more about what you do, how you got into the industry, and why you do what you do. So this is very exciting for me to talk to you about this stuff today. Mickey, obviously with his other podcast, Beats on Repeat, is a little bit of a beer snob and beer nerd. I'm sure you've got some good questions for him.
So. I do, yeah. They're all up here.
But first off, what are we drinking today, by the way? So you brought us some beer.
This is Jazz Hands. So, thanks for having me. I appreciate being on the show. I am a fan as well, and I'm not sure that I'm nearly as interesting or as exciting as you guys are claiming I am, but but I'm here and I'm happy to be here.
Hey,
to be having a beer with you. So
you're a former basketball player, so anybody who does play basketball,
former is about accurate. I played a couple weeks ago. Former is a good description. Yeah.
How did you feel after?
The lower back.
Do you play outdoors or indoors?
Indoors. I play in a co-ed league, and some days it goes really well, and some days not as well. Yeah. And it's just fun to get out and have a run. And yeah.
Good. Are you? Have you been following the NBA playoffs? Are you excited for Toronto starting tomorrow?
Yeah, it's funny. I got rid of cable at my house. I made a decision to get rid of cable, and got two kids under five, and just wasn't really getting to it and spending the money and that kind of thing. And then. Yeah. I've discovered that I can watch entire games in like 11 minutes on YouTube. It really gives me the Cole's notes of the game.
Yeah, NBA game. What is it called? Game?
NBA League Pass. NBA League Pass.
That's what we have. So right after the game ends, unfortunately during the playoffs, they block it out block it out.
I tried to buy a League Pass and I couldn't. Well, I'm also not very tech savvy, so I may have just failed at that. But I got rid of cable in March and then. March Madness started a couple days later, and I'm like, I did not think this through. And then Tiger won the Masters, and I was like, I didn't think that through. And then all the playoffs started, and I'm like, God, I'm just not
brilliant.
Who thought
the Raptors would go this far?
Yeah, I had hope. I mean, I've been following the Raptors pretty closely with a group of, I've got a WhatsApp chat with my older brother, his best friend, and then one of my best friends, and we chat Raptors all day, every day, sports all day, every day, but Raptors specifically. And I wanted to have faith, but I also, get caught up in things that I like. And, the Raptors, I was big into the Kawhi trade. I mean, who wasn't a DDR fan? And he was a good player and a good guy, seemingly. I never had lunch with him. But
there.
Oh, yeah, Kawhi is just otherworldly. Now everybody sees what happened, right? And if they went through the old process, you know, again, and lost in the second round or even the conference finals. Well, now what do? You have to blow it up anyway. So at least now they get this exposure and this experience. And, you know, if Kawhi leaves, well, they had to blow it up anyway. So
yeah, I think at this point it's kind of like,
we'll just turn this into an NBA podcast.
This is not called Track and Basketball. For people listening, that I was the only single person, well, actually me and Ryan Russillo were the only two people, I think, in the entire universe that picked the Toronto to win this series. I picked Toronto in six. Didn't expect them to win four in a row, but they still won in six.
What did you pick in the finals?
Golden State. And Toronto. Golden State in five.
But I've had that. You're not alone, my friend. You're not alone.
On our NBA thread with Jamie and Dave. Hi, Dave. Shouts out, Dave. And the other guy,
Black Mike. Black Mike, as he's your first one.
I don't know if I'll edit that or not. But anyways, on our threads anyways, and people I know in my circle, everyone wasn't giving Toronto love. And look at him now.
Well, see, when this episode comes out next week or so, hopefully, all cross fingers here.
Yeah.
Knock on some wood that Toronto's going to be up 2-0.
I just want to see a good series, to be honest with you. Like, I kind of want to pick Toronto in seven, just because home court advantage is so huge in the NBA playoffs. But I don't think they can beat Golden State, even without Durant. I mean, it's just, you know, Kawhi, they're not going to stop, but like everyone else, like Curry's going to go off for, you know, 35. Clay gets 35.
I'm a little torn, right? Curry's my favorite player ever.
Yeah.
He's become that. I mean, he surpassed Steve Nash a while ago. It's just too electric to watch. It's crazy, right?
Yeah. And he's so hot right now.
Here's one thing that I'll say is that this is very unpopular. I might ask you to edit it later, but, you know, pick one player to start a franchise from the history of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I have the first pick. Whoever has second pick, it's Michael Jordan, because it takes Steph Curry. Who's ever changed the game?
Hot take.
Who's ever changed the game like this, right? And then on the way back, I'll end up with Clay or Kawhi or Shaq or somebody on the way back in the whole draft. But yeah, I'll take Steph to start my...
Absolutely.
There was an old sabermetric stat that him shooting threes from the corner was statistically better than LeBron James dunking the basketball.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, hard to argue.
But I love the Raptors. Right now. So I'm watching two of my favorite players, Clay and Steph, against the Raptors, which I want to see win. So
we'll see. That's kind of why I like both teams as well. So that's kind of why I want to see a good series. But we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm sure all the listeners...
It's the longest we've ever talked about basketball on this podcast.
I'm sure all the listeners right now are just like, jaws a drop. You take Curry over Jordan?
I know. It's outrageous. But, you know, I could make a mathematical argument for it.
You take Curry over LeBron?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, Curry over LeBron, absolutely. Curry over Jordan's the really, really hard one. But I just figure if I'm building an entire franchise on the way back in the draft, I would end up with just some unbelievable. I'd end up with Olajuwon, or I'd end up with, you know, even Clay. Start Steph and Clay against anybody ever. And I'm like, yeah, it could work.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Interesting.
I'd actually take John Stockton, probably. Pass first point guard.
I watched him score rugged. 7 points and get 7 assists in a game and completely control it one time. Unbelievable.
Okay, you can stop talking.
Jamie would take Kobe Bryant, so we'll just say that.
Yeah, Kobe's great. Yeah, Kobe's great.
Okay, well, to all of you listening out there.
Okay, back to beer.
Sorry about all that. Yeah,
that's okay. We got our thoughts out. So hopefully when this airs and you guys are all listening to this, the Raptors are going to be up in the series. And
2-0 probably.
If not, Stephen Curry's going to be having a good series. And, it'll be good.
Of course.
But we're here to talk about Sam and his company.
Yes.
Parkside Brewing. And we did ask you a question. You brought us 3 different types of beers here. You brought us Dimwit, which is something I know you guys do as more of a seasonal option. The Dreamboat, which is literally probably one of my favorite beers of all time. Mm. It's their hazy IPA.
So
and then you brought
good.
Us this Jazz Hands, which is a salted lime pale ale. Now, Mickey, before we started today, you said that you're starting to see this trend a little bit more where you're seeing this salty.
Yeah. We always talk about beer trends. Obviously, Northwest IPAs, and then got into more sort of Belgian-influenced beers. Obviously, sours were very big for a long time, and there's a lot of breweries that still do sours. But this salted citrus combination, or even salted beers in general, I've noticed in the past like year and a half, I've seen a few. I had one just the other day, which this one's better. I won't mention that one, but this one's better, by the way.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You get that citrus, refreshing citrus punch, and then you get that the salt kind of makes you want to come back for like a second sip.
So I guess a question is if for a company like you guys, is this something that you guys kind of like follow the trend and you guys want to kind of experiment a little bit? Or is this just more of the brewer was just like, let's just play around and see what we can do? Or
so this is a collaboration beer that we made with Steel and Oak and our friends from St. Augustine's to celebrate their 2000th beer list that they put out.
Okay.
It's whatever the brewers want to make, right? Yeah, the brewers start an email thread. They start getting on the phone together. They have a few beers, and they just decide what they want to make.
Yeah.
So I couldn't necessarily comment what goes on in their heads. That being said, we just finished our collaboration sort of the set that we did with Backcountry that was our Yuzu Ginger Maybach.
I saw that.
I think
one.
It's Maybach. Yeah. I actually had that one. It was really good.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Backcountry as well.
And you know, I claim it's the best Yuzu Ginger Maybach in the world, right? And that I've ever had, at least. And so we had a lot of fun with that. And you know, I don't think you could ever claim that was trending anywhere. No. It's just what everybody wanted to make. And hey, can we get this ingredient? Can we try this? Can we do this? Yeah. Sure.
Let's so how do collaborations fun. Generally work in the sense? Is it like they'll just come up with some ingredient ideas and they'll just end up making it at one of the breweries? Is that kind of how it works? Or
yeah, you pick a brewery that has the time and space. And fortunately we had a tank open. It's often just one tank one day. And if we can make it work, then you know the breweries will combine forces, show up and hang out together for the day and brew. And sometimes drink together for the day, and it turns into a bit of a fun party and just kind of hanging out. It's like the epitome of the BC craft beer scene and craft beer scene in general, right? Just people getting along and having fun. And
that's kind of a thing that I've noticed with the beer industry is the fact that there's a lot of collaboration beers coming out now. Like you guys, I've seen Strange Fellows do one with even from the guys with Mammy Tails. I'm sure you've done. Have you done some with restaurants and stuff like this before?
With restaurants, yeah, we did one with Vidges last year.
Okay.
And we've done, I mean, we have a recurring collaboration with Strange Fellows. Those are good friends of ours, best friends of sorts in the business. And then we just did, as stated, the Backcountry, and this is Steel and Oak and St. Augustine's. And then we've got the Brewer's Roll collaboration that we do every year.
Yeah.
So between us, Yellow Dog, Twin Sales, and Moody Ales, we all get together and do a charitable brew once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is year four, and this year it's our turn.
Okay.
So that's imminent as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard that you mentioned the interesting there that the brewers kind of have a really open dialogue with each other and
Absolutely.
A really honest, transparent dialogue. I actually ran into at Brass Neck Brewing. I can't remember the name of the brewery. It's the newest brewery in Richmond. I can't remember the name of it, but his name's Travis. He's the head brewmaster. And he was actually, this was like last year. I can't remember exactly the time, but he was really candid about like how much the brewers help each other, like especially as a new brewery and a new brewer, and how like really supportive and helpful they are. So I think that's a really cool thing about the our BC brewing community for sure.
Yeah, and seeing that, I mean, sometimes there's a practicality to it. Hey, we need to use this yeast strain, or we've got an excess in this hops, or something like that. And then there'll be sort of a base ingredient. But short of that, I think it's just creative minds and a couple beers and a direction. Yeah.
Do you were saying that? So how many owners are in the company with you?
Three. There's three of us. Okay. So yeah, you had said that I'm the owner. I'm technically my job title is the co-executive super president.
Ooh,
super president. Yeah.
But co.
Though.
Yeah, there's many of us. Yeah.
Is that what your card says?
It does. Yeah. Yeah. I make my own cards. Of course it does.
Yeah. Even better.
Good. Yeah.
So when it comes to like so stuff like this is like you just kind of give them free rein. Do you kind of guide your brewers into like kind of like we need to have this for the company, or is it just more like let them kind of do what they want to do? And then
I think a happy brewer is the one that can be creative and be on their own. I try to stay out of the back for the most part. I mean, we have our weekly meetings and production meetings, and we talk about, you know, what can sell and what not sell. I mean, it's more of a, they may say, hey, we're thinking of these three options, what do you think?
Yeah.
And then between us and you know, we come up with the brand, we come up with how we're going to sell it and what it's going to look like. But for the most part, it's please be as creative as you want and bring me what you want to do.
Amazing. I think that's really, really cool. So I guess one of the first questions that I'm sure a lot of listeners out there right now are kind of curious, how did you get into this industry? Like, how did you kind of get into the beer industry?
Necessity. Oh, I was an 8-year student. I was in college for quite a while, 7.5 years to get my undergrad degree, 4-5 post-secondary schools, 3 years of college basketball, and I was pouring drinks. I just recently surpassed the amount of time that I poured drinks to the amount of time that I sold beer. So I've now been selling beer for longer than I poured drinks. I was a bartender for a long time.
Are you originally from BC?
Yeah, I was born in Toronto, but I've been here since I was two. So I'm 41. Okay. I'm about as local as it gets. Yeah.
Okay. Amazing.
Where did you pour drinks?
Where didn't I pour drinks? My first bartending gig was at the Fog and Suds on Robson.
Oh.
That was a great place to learn how to deal with crowds. And
what is that place?
Just like a crazy like Irish style pub. But
does it still
like,
exist?
More like a there's like a dance floor and a DJ too, right?
No, well, I guess at some point, but no, it was more of like an old school Margarita Monday with two blenders and like one like sort of margarita base and like 300 people, you know, kind of in the place and chicken wing bones everywhere. And it's just sort of madness that way. Right. So that was a good place to learn how to keep up.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Oh, I was a bar back at Club Foda. I was a bartender at the Black Bear Pub, and then the place that I spent the most time was pouring beers at the Yaletown Brew Pub.
Nice.
Mm. Yeah.
When did you realize you were like, this was something you kind of wanted to get into? Did you ever work for a brewery before you opened or became
a partner? the brew pub would have been the first brewery, and I got great exposure to the beer world. And I mean, that was a lot through Ian Hill and a lot through ultimately at Dave Varga at Red Truck, and then Hamish McRae and Justin Macarius and kind of that world. So it was from the brew pub into the Red Truck world. That's where I kind of started in that. But yeah, I poured drinks at Yaletown for a long time.
Huh.
Crazy.
So Parkside's been around now. You guys are doing, this is 6 years now?
No, thanks. June 8th, we turned three.
Three. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I left my old business November of 2015 and went out and helped physically build paints and you know,
so are you carry guys heavy the, things. You guys are the third brewery then in Port Moody's Brewery Row. Right?
Fourth, technically, yeah. So Twin Sails are our good friends. Yellow Dog was first. Moody Ales was shortly after. Okay. Twin Sails was about 6-7 months before us, and then us. And then soon there'll be a fifth, so we won't be the last one in at that point. Bakery Brewing, our friends from Moody Ales, are opening up an offshoot in between us.
Wow.
What made you decide to go out there? Like, go to Port Moody?
A couple different things. One day I got a call from Vern Lamborn, and I had Vern's number in my phone for some reason. I mean, him and Ian, who's now at Strange Fellows, had been friends for a long time. And I'm kind of looking at my phone and Vern Lamborn's calling, and I'm like, geez.
Who's Vern?
Oh, Vern's our brewmaster, my business partner.
That's the business partner?
So Vern was the first small batch brewer at Granville Island.
Okay.
So Vern, like if there's a Mount Rushmore of brewers down, he'd be sort of one of the guys, I would think. And so you get a call from a guy like Vern Lamborn, and you pick it up. Right. And he just asked me, you know, straight up, hey, it's Vern. Do you know a guy that wants to talk about a thing? I said, I do. It's me. I think it's me. And he said, okay, let's meet for lunch tomorrow. And so we went and had a beer and some appetizer at Nordstrom's. And he kind of told me what was going on and gave me a little bit of the backstory on who he was going into business with. I mean, he was consulting for a while. He had left Granville Island and was kind of put in a position to consult for a year. He couldn't hit a non-compete, so he couldn't open anything for a year.
Okay.
But told me about the space, and he was from Port Moody, and I was familiar with Port Moody. I had worked out there quite a bit back in the day, and I went out and checked out the space and met our other business partner, Jeff, who I actually knew already quite well, and just got after it. It was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
So basically from the genesis of that type of meeting, you guys were open within probably, what, 6 months to a year?
Yeah, it was, again, November, so went out there and started hacking at an old machine shop and trying to get it, turn it into a brewery and sort of prepping everything that we needed to get going as a business and a brand. And then June 8th, we had a big sign that said opening soon-ish on the door for a long time, and then it turned into June 8th, and then a June 8th-ish, and then from June 8th-ish, it turned to June 8th, 2 p.m., and at 1 p.m. it started to rain and we had a lineup, so we just let everybody in.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Has the reception in the neighborhood been as inviting and welcoming as you guys expected?
Yeah, what a community. I mean, I don't even think we could have expected it to be that positive. I mean, Jeff and Vern are both from Port Moody, and I was just familiar with the area. But, you know, the amount of walking traffic from Rocky Point Park, the addition of the SkyTrain, the Evergreen Line that went in, and just
it literally drops you off right there.
Yeah.
Doesn't it drop you off right in front of the Brewery Row, basically?
Directly at our front door.
Yeah. It's like right there.
It's a 5 or 10 minute walk. But
if it was at your front door.
Yeah,
directly on top, actually. It just feeds right into the brewery and the escalator. But so the SkyTrain went in, and that went in a few months later. But again, the walking traffic and then just the community feel out in the Tri-Cities, Port Moody specifically. But I mean, Coquitlam kind of surrounds all of Port Moody, and there's quite a few residents there, and then Burnaby as well. So the access points are really good. Mm-hmm. And Port Moody's beautiful. It's like North Van and Kitts had a baby.
Yeah. Very newly developed area, but really beautiful, pretty.
Yeah, it's super beautiful. We're on a park on the ocean. That's my wife says I can't call it the ocean. Technically it's the inlet, but it is the ocean. It's ocean water.
That's a beautiful baby.
Yeah. That's interesting. You mentioned proximity and accessibility.
Love child or sex baby or something.
I always felt that way about
like if you cross like Chinatown or Gastown, that'd be one ugly baby.
Well, no, it'd be like the coolest baby around.
No, it'd be really cool, but no, I think the coolest baby would be like East Van, like Mount Pleasant and
Hastings Sunrise. Oh, yeah,
that'd be the hipster baby.
Yeah. kind of is, actually, if you think about it. But you mentioned accessibility to your brewery. I've always felt that Daggerad was at a bit of a disadvantage just because of their location. Because even though they are close to kind of a SkyTrain line, it's in this really weird industrial park area where there's all these sort of like, you know, tech firms and kind of that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, they've, I think, are to be considered one of the better. And obviously they do just a Belgian style, but one of the more prominent breweries in the city. And it's interesting because they're so far out of the way. So, but you guys don't have that problem because you are on a kind of a brewery row, right?
What's really interesting for me is the amount of people that come in. Like, I'll look at a sales report in the night and I'll see that our flights were the number one seller of the evening. Mm-hmm. You can usually tell that people are either new or coming out, and, you know, Brewers Row has really turned into something that people have sought out and come see, right? The amount of people, I'm a Vancouver guy, I grew up in Vancouver, but the amount of people I talk to in Vancouver, they go, oh, I've never made it to Port Moody.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't far.
We were having that conversation the other day. We were saying, maybe when we're done this episode, we'll head down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I could drive you guys over there. But yeah, I mean, just the sort of the concept when you're in Vancouver and you have everything, you know, right at your fingertips, you don't necessarily go 30 minutes in any direction. You just kind of, you know, if you live in Kits, Maine is east. And if you live, you know, on Maine, then UBC is far west and that kind of thing. And that's what you do. But so you can just kind of tell that there's new people coming in all the time, right? So although, yeah, the access points are awesome, there's still a lot of people that are just discovering it.
Yeah.
The BC Ale Trail, that's helped supported via the mm-hmm. BC Craft Brewers Guild.
Yeah.
So the word's getting out. And I mean, you know, one thing that kind of struck me recently was somebody talking about their Airbnb and how they get messages, how close to Brewers Row are you?
Technically,
I found out it's the most densely populated brewery district in the country.
In the country.
Right. So it was already that with four, and then with a fifth one, it's going to be hard. I mean, you know, where can you think?
Can you think they can have more than five?
Yeah, anything's possible. There's a will, there's a way. You know, I'm not sure the city is going to be super stoked about adding more. I can't speak for the city, but five's a pretty good number right now. We're pretty happy
think about
it.
What we have just in Brewery Creek.
Like where I live in this area, like there's like 30 different breweries in this area.
Yeah, but it's separated. If you go to East Van, there's Brewery Creek, which just has essentially 33 acres, Brass Neck, Main Street Brewing, and now Electric Bicycle Brewing. Well, then also Faculty.
And R&B, Faculty, Red Truck. Yeah, there's R&B a lot going on there.
Yeah, there's like a ton of breweries there. There's like 8.
Yeah.
Or 10.
But then if you go, obviously, east to where, you know, East Van is, then there's a huge, dense population of breweries there. But
yeah, ours just happens to be on one block. It's about a block and a half between five breweries.
Yeah.
With five, you know, so.
Are you the biggest one? Or the?
No. Capacity-wise, we're far from that. You know, we're also one of the youngest ones. So, yeah, we're not the biggest one at all.
No. I think I asked you this maybe a week or two ago when we were chatting. Your guys' size right now is something that you're very comfortable with. It's not something you guys are looking to kind of like expand and massively grow. Like, how many tanks do you guys have?
Oh, that's a good question. We just brought in 6 new 30 hectoliter fermenters. So that puts us up, you know, over 20 tanks in the back. I'd have to count. It's all a blur, right? At this point. But yeah, capacity wise, yeah, we're not the biggest on the row at all.
Oh.
And then, but the conversation we had about, you know, how big do you want to grow? I mean, we don't have a lot of desire to become sort of a regional size brewery. I mean, or the space to do it all. You know, we're in a 6,000 square foot warehouse, which is cool and good. And we're running out of beer and running out of space. So that's certainly happening, and we're going to have to figure something out about that. But, you know, the scaling that it would take to get to be, you know, double our size and triple our size, I don't know if we have a big appetite for that.
Well, it's kind of funny because I was having a conversation with a friend of the podcast, Patrick Drozd, who owns a good company. We were chatting about this yesterday, how there's like an interesting intersection. And I don't know if this is people's perception, but when it comes to like, especially in the craft breweries, independent breweries, if they kind of rise and they get too big, there's this weird backlash that they kind of receive.
Yeah.
And you can see it with like some of the breweries like Goose IPA, Stanley Park.
Well, P49.
I
would say would be the biggest example.
But I mean, they're still really popular, and I'm not
totally,
they're
totally
very, very popular, but it's like there's like this weird dichotomy that people love the idea of the niche, small, cute, mm-hmm. independent. I mean, they're all independent, most of them, unless they've been bought out.
Yeah, it's almost like you can be sort of socially chastised for growing your brand.
Yeah,
and a lot of that connotation is your quality goes down with your production going up. Right?
But it's weird because I know Labatt's owns Stanley Park now. Mm-hmm. I think they picked them up.
Well, I think Gravelin and Stanley Park are pretty far out of the. I don't think you can consider those to be microbreweries.
But
anymore.
I mean, but they started that way at one point.
Oh, of course, yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess what I'm trying to get at is it's like when you're talking about the idea of like how you guys have a size parameter and you kind of like this is where you are and then we have a space and then we're not really thinking that much. Right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're selling out a beer, which is exactly what a brewery wants and a really great space. I just always. It's so unique because it's kind of weird that you would get that kind of backlash because people like your product and you naturally would think maybe we should make more of it.
I know. It's kind of like the collective consciousness of beer drinkers. Like if it's not small and like independent and craft or it gets too big, you start seeing it around everywhere. It's not as cool.
Did you ever hear of those like whispers or things like that?
It's a funny thing. And it's almost like people say, oh, I liked this band when they were small and then they got popular and I stopped liking this band. And it's kind of like, well, why? Like, they're still the same people. Like, you don't support it. But with the brewery thing, I do get a little confused by it because, you know, and I don't know if it's BC specific or not. And maybe this will be something I investigate in my travels more. But you'll get a craft drinker in BC that'll swear by a Deschutes and bless Deschutes and make lovely beer. I think there's a bit of branding. I think there's a bit of... I just think there's more to that conversation, and I think that sometimes people just kind of turn their nose up when they shouldn't.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like that's
I think that happens to people. I mean, we certainly don't have, you know.
Yeah, Deschutes makes great beer. Parallel 49 makes great beer. Rogue out of Portland still makes great beer.
I remember
that conversation between the size of Parallel 49 and the amount of good that they've done and the amount of awards they've done. I mean, the size and scale they are. I think the perception is that they've done so well in this market specifically that like on a sort of global standpoint to walk and grab a Deschutes and then claim that Parallel 49 is too big is just is nonsensical. Yeah. It's crazy, right?
Well, we had this conversation on our last episode of I actually brought a P49 beer, the Filthy Dirty, on our two episodes ago podcast.
Lovely
my co-host Tristan was like, he said the exact same thing. He knew he was doing it. He knows he does it. He knows he has a sort of what's the word I'm looking for? He has an affinity for like labeling. Like so he really likes clean, like 33 Acres branding, that kind of stuff. And I think branding is really important because Parallel 49's branding, as I think kind of standoffish for a lot of people, this is very like 90s cartoonish branding. And he was even telling me during recording that he knows the beer is good and he knows they get a bad rep, but he just can't get away from the branding. I'm like,
it's weird.
Tristan, what are you talking about? Shout out if you're listening.
But it's weird because when that company came out, that was the first thing that people loved about them.
Yeah.
Was their branding. I remember when I was working at Chill Winston and we brought on Gypsy Tears and people were like, I fucking love this.
Yeah.
I love this branding. I love this. And I love this beer. And it's a great beer.
The optics of branding can be, you know, it's not like obviously the most important thing is how the beer is, how it tastes.
Of course.
And also obviously the people behind the beer too, right? If it's good people making good beer, you know, making great beer, that's awesome. But there are a portion of people out there that will be turned off by branding. I just find it so ridiculous.
Do you guys feel that way when you guys make your cans? You need to have your branding stand out in a certain way? Or do you guys need to be, or like, did you feel a certain pressure to be more unique in certain things or like that? Or
shelf presence is important. And, you know, I like how easily recognizable. I mean, it's almost like a recognizable rapper or something, Parallel 49, like you can, you know, like music rapper as opposed to a label, right? You know what's their beer when they put it out. And totally. I think that's great for recognition, right? So from 30,000 feet up in the air and looking at it, it's like, great. When you're looking at a shelf, you know, the practice I go through sometimes is a photo of a wall at a liquor store.
Yeah.
And you put cans and labels into that wall and like, hey, can a customer find that, right? I went to a marketing thing years ago at the American Craft Brewers Conference and the heads of Deschutes and the heads of Firestone Walker and the heads of Sierra Nevada were all there sort of talking about marketing. So we're all on the edge of our seats and taking notes.
Yeah.
And they say the amount of decisions that get made at the shelf, like right in front of the shelf, are staggering. They're like 90%.
Totally.
So how are you going to attract eyes? Where, you know, your shelf position, you know, is there enough descriptors of what the beer is so people can just decide when they're at that wall, right?
Yeah.
And the U.S. market's still quite a bit different than this market and the amount of beers there and filtering through that. But yeah, it matters. But I mean, you know, you want it to be soulful and representative of what you're doing and what your brand is. And Yeah, and you want it to be eye-catching on a shelf, for sure.
Yeah. Is that something that when you go to like a store like Legacy or like any liquor store, where the beer is placed, is that something you have control over? Or is that something they...
No, there's a lot of begging and pleading, and then, you know,
like, don't
whatever.
Put us at the bottom, don't put us in the top right corner.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind
of
eye to
store
thigh,
employees
right?
At the end of the day, I think, right?
Yeah, because whenever I go to Legacy, you guys are always right in the middle. Right.
Well, we're grateful. I mean, sometimes that has to do with, you know, beers that move. They put them in a convenient place to restock them. And sometimes, you know, they just have an affinity and it fits there. And sometimes it's like, oh, well, you have three SKUs. So we have three spots here and that's where you go, and different places for different stores. But, you know, the old saying and the old sort of thing is that eye to thigh, it's a baseball strike zone. Right. And people aren't going to look below their knees and they're not going to look above their shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you take sort of
very
average.
Rarely, yeah.
Yeah. Average heights of people like my wife, who's maybe 5'4". If our beer's on the top shelf, she's not going to ask somebody to help her get a six pack. She's just going to choose something else.
Yeah. Wow, that's such an interesting thing to think about that. Just think about
that.
That's
part of the
just,
human. No, yeah,
just,
it's how no, humans process information.
No,
it's
I understand.
Very visual.
I understand that, but just think about that. Think about like if you have, especially in our market, there's probably over 200 to 400. I'm just guessing. You might know a better answer to this one, but how many breweries are in BC?
Over 500 in BC.
In BC.
Think,
okay, so think about that.
Count.
Now let's think you go to Legacy. Legacy is a really good, or Brewery Creek up on 14th. And these,
yeah,
these
I like
places,
Brewery Creek better. Legacy, I think, has a bigger collection, like more Belgian stuff, and
they're all just supporting craft beer. We like them all the same,
and that's amazing. No. So but let's say you go there, right, and you have all these breweries competing for shelf space, as you're talking about, where they get prominently placed and what sells and what doesn't.
Yeah,
but it's such an interesting thing that, like, as consumers, we don't think about that. Yeah. We don't think about, like, oh, there's a reason why 33 Acres is right here, and there's a reason why this is kind of here.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's because, like you're saying, shelf space, and it's also, like, restocking. So if a beer sells a lot, we're going to put it in a more convenient place. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's the way branding and marketing, I don't think people realize how, like, as you were saying, that's, like, 90% of people's decisions. It's like, if the can looks pretty.
Yeah.
People generally might buy it probably more than if it's something that's a little bit more neutral.
Now we're talking about your average sort of casual craft beer drinker who doesn't really necessarily have, you know, doesn't know any brewers, doesn't know any people who are really into craft beer, doesn't, you know, read up any, do any research on it. That's kind of like a big portion of the population, right? So I would like to think it's maybe slowly changing, but we're still kind of we're pretty, in terms of our craft brewery scene, it's still pretty like new, I would say. I mean, we've only been really, like, we have breweries that have been doing it since like the 90s, but really, like, compared to California and Oregon, I think it's still like a fairly blossoming industry, right?
Yeah, but let me look at the can he's bringing out right now. He's bringing out the Dimwave. Look at me.
Beautiful.
So here's the thing.
That's a great name, by the way, because that's something I want to call you sometimes.
Well, right back at you, buddy.
Funny, all of us, all Vern, Jeff, and myself, we all claim that it's named after the other one. Yeah. You know, kind of thing. So totally. Here's a good example of sort of shelf awareness or shelf sort of aesthetic, right? This can, you know, nice can, cool label, don't get me wrong. Dark black can, and it rolled out the first year with just the pack deck tops, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't see this on radio, but I'm showing our Dimwit can, which again I think is a beautiful can. It's sort of a black base can with kind of a copper gold trim to it, and a yellow sort of light bulb electricity kind of pattern on it. But if the can's backwards, basically,
the print's really small.
There's basically no print. It's a bar label and a black can with a yellow line through it, and it doesn't tell you that it doesn't tell you anything. It doesn't tell you it's the lightest, most refreshing beer. It doesn't tell you it's a multiple award winner. It doesn't tell you what color it is. It doesn't tell you anything. Uh-huh. So us, we released this basically in the first summer that, you know, the first real summer, so second summer, and we released that, and it struggled on the shelf. Right. And it struggled, you know, dark black can, kind of, you know, you can't expect everybody to face off your cans in the stores. And there was really just me at that time and one other rep. And, you know, so by the time you face it all off and then it slides down the rollers a little bit more, it turns again.
Yeah.
Right. We've put that into this bright yellow.
I was going to say, that's why
blue box with awards on it and branding on it and, you know, bright yellow, bright blue. Like, does this not look like a lighter, more refreshing, fun summer beer?
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of, the beer hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah.
Right. The actual can hasn't changed because we have that many of the cans, but you know, this is certainly a.
And that, has that helped sales?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Five times. Yeah.
See, that's just.
Right. But again, that was our mistake. It wasn't anybody's mistake, but you know, you've got to sort of let it, you know, you're looking at our Dreamboat can. That looks like a fun, refreshing beer. I think you look at Jazz Hands and I mean, it's eye catching. It's yellow. It's green. It's got dinosaurs dancing on it. It's got, you know,
well,
it's got St. Augustine.
Jesus holding a boombox.
Well, I think
amazing.
It's St. Augustine's holding the boombox.
Oh, St. Augustine,
yeah,
sorry.
Augustine, I guess.
Oh, yeah, the beer's not long enough.
But, you know, he's playing a funky jam and the dinosaurs are digging it. And yeah, so, you know, people are having fun with that too.
What kind of religious person are you? How do you get
that? Oh, we're not going to talk about religion, but I do want to say that
Tyrannosaurus. This conversation went from basketball to religion. All right.
Tyrannosaurus Rex can only dance with other Tyrannosaurus Rex because of the, I mean, hands, the Dreamboat hands.
The Dreamboat can is amazing. I remember the first time I saw that can, I was just like.
See, Dreamboat, so this can to me, I love all the branding, by the way.
Thanks.
But this can to me is the most sort of like Mount Pleasant-y, if I could use that term. It's very like, obviously pattern based. It's just a bunch of ships, but like I could see someone wearing like a collared.
It's a bunch of dream
shirt.
Boats. Funny enough, it's exactly. A bunch of dream boats.
But I mean, if you think about it, like I wear necklaces, and right when I saw the necklace, and I love ships. If you look around my apartment, I've got like boats everywhere. So
he does, yeah.
And I was just like, and then I just tried it, and I was like, I don't know where it was because I know the hazy IPA thing is a thing that's kind of picked
Speaking
up lately.
We have trends, yeah.
And I tried it for the first time, and I was like, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
It's like, and I had to find it, source it out somewhere. And Legacy puts
yeah,
in the
skills. Yeah.
But I remember one time I went in there, and I think
that
like,
was a good sound. But what is this? That means I need more. Got it.
Hey, it was good. It was
what
positive.
What does that mean?
I like went in, and I bought, like, I think I bought all of them.
Yeah. I did that with the Kith and Kin of the collaboration with Steel Oak and Brass Neck. But when you find a beer that really speaks to you, yeah, you just want to have it all the time. And yeah, this is one of those ones I recently tried. It's fucking fantastic.
Thanks. That's my favorite beer ever. And, you know, the funny thing about this can is, you know, we had about a 90-minute meeting about chest hair for this can, you know, looking at four different chest hair. Yeah, there you can see that there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 chest hair. Really important to get the chest hairs right, apparently.
How many chest hairs is too many?
Yeah.
I don't have chest hair, so I can't really comment on this conversation. So
yeah, I have less than 7 chest hairs, so I was out. Yeah, I was out on the conversation, yeah.
Perfect.
Ladies, if you have a number of chest hairs that you prefer your men to have, do you like a lot?
Yeah, contact us at. Yeah.
What length? Like, what's the, because we're not in the 70s anymore.
You like a nice little carpet.
Speaking of the Megan P.I. themed tiki party we were at on Sunday.
Yeah.
Lots of chest hair flying around. Shout out Zach.
I don't know if I'd like, if I was a girl, I don't know if I'd, chest hair would just be weird.
How about we ask the next female guest we have on? Let's ask Tracy.
Every interview that you do from now on, there'll be the, okay, you know, instead of the boxers or brief, it's chest hair. Let's talk about it. 5 minutes.
Because I notice a lot of men are unbuttoning more buttons these days. Well, just the places
I notice a lot of men, they're also doing the waxing.
Ooh, that's, oh man, that's kind of too much, isn't it? You want to be like a turtle shell up there?
This sounds painful.
It's weird.
Yeah, I don't have enough to worry about it. So, yeah.
Very grateful for my Native American heritage.
Well, you're tantalizing me. Why don't I crack one of those bad boys open? I haven't tried that one yet.
Dreamboat or Dimwit?
Yeah, do Dimwit.
On it. Is it noon yet?
It is.
Almost.
11:42. So the next question I was kind of curious about is, if there is someone out there listening, and I'm hoping that there is someone out there listening to this idea of this, if you wanted to start a brewery, what kind of tips would you give someone who's interested in kind of getting into this space, wanting to do it? Because I know friends of mine back in Saskatchewan, where I grew up, have thought about it. It's an emerging market. Craft beer is starting to take off in there. But there's a lot of logistics to it, and there's a lot of things that people maybe don't realize. And now having done it, as you guys, when do you guys celebrate your 3 years?
June 8th.
Okay, so it's coming up. And like basically when this episode comes out, you're going to be having your 3-year anniversary. So congratulations on that. But,
Thank you.
Is there anything that you've learned over these last 3 years, or maybe some advice you would give to? I'm sure there's plenty you've learned.
Give us all your inside tips.
It's a lot of things. I mean, the analogy I make with sort of anybody with a hospitality background is open a restaurant without a chef, you're probably in trouble. You know, you see restaurants, they open with like, oh, we're going to cheap out on the, you know, we're going to hire an up and coming chef that doesn't have any experience. And then the amount of sort of labor and inventory and sort of that kind of thing go a little sideways, and they put themselves in a position that isn't ideal. You know, I guess it's a bit of a loaded question. I guess it would be, you know, a lot to do with location, a lot to do with what overall goals are. I think a lot of people, the people that I've talked to that have sort of consulted with and for, you know, they say, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to put our brewery here and you know, we're not going to can and we're not going to do this. And it's like, do you have a lounge endorsement? How many seats do you have? What kind of beers are you going to make? Do you have a hop contract? Are you going to can or are you not going to can? And where are you going to sell those cans?
Is that a big decision that brewers have to go through, is deciding if you want to can or not?
Well,
because you would have to. Can you? You have to have your own canning line, or do you?
No, you could have your own canning line, and depending on what sort of level of canning line you want to have, and then or you could have a third party come in. I mean, West Coast Canning has done a lot of solids for a lot of little breweries to get their beers on.
Do you guys do your own?
We bought a canning line. West Coast Canning certainly come to help us when our canning line is broken a few times. So yeah, just where are you going to distribute it? How are you going to distribute it? Right? I mean the. I listened to Nigel Pike and Nigel Springthorpe back in the day. I read an interview. I'm sure I listened to it and read it, but they basically said that in a brewery, the bills that come in comparison to a restaurant, they come in at the same rate. They just happen to be five times bigger.
Yeah.
So, and then you start talking about kegs and how are you going to brand your kegs? How are you ever going to get your kegs back? You know, where are you going to get your tap handles? Where are you going to get glassware? You know, then you start talking about staffing conversations and, then it's a lot of things. It's sort of endless, and we're in year three, and we're still learning as we go, for sure.
Yeah, is the tasting room a big part of your business? Absolutely. Is that something that's just kind of like a nice?
I think it's the tasting room for breweries around the province, and I'm assuming anywhere. I mean, I was just in Ontario, went to a lot of the great breweries that are in Toronto proper, and without those tasting rooms, there's no life, right? And not only brand affinity and introduction of beers and people being able to come out and buy flights and try a bunch of things at once. The costs of pouring beers in your own room can be pretty attractive in comparison to sort of the shipping of kegs and shipping of cans and that kind of thing too. Yeah. So I think what it's done is basically the lounge endorsements and how the liquor laws have changed over the last few years is really giving little breweries a chance to succeed, right? Your ability to host people and actually kind of build relationships with customers in your own space. The amount of people that we get to host at Parkside in Port Moody is, we have 200 seats on a hot sunny day. We've got 100 seats on a patio and 100 seats inside. That's a lot of
amazing.
That's a lot of pints in hands, right? And a lot of chance to spend with customers and kind of become friends and hopefully they buy the beer when they're not there and hopefully they come back and visit us again, right?
So, is there any laws that BC still has to do that would make your lives easier? Is there anything that's still holding you guys back in some ways?
We've been really lucky. I think if you ask somebody from a different
municipality or something.
Municipality was the word I was looking for. Thank you. Yeah. I think if you asked a number of people from a number of different areas, I think they'd sort of be exasperated by it. They'd be exhausted with some of the things they have to go through with their city. We didn't have that experience in Port Moody. They've been very, very supportive and very helpful. And we were quick with all the sort of paperwork and permits and that kind of thing. So
can you be a little bit more specific on exactly what roadblocks or obstacles might vary for different areas? Do you know? Or
yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just building permits. A lot of it's you know, plumbing permits and building permits and
because you had a raw license space, and permits you had a raw and space when you guys went in.
It was a machine shop that we basically had to break a few sort of wooden mezzanines out, and it was and then tear the floors up and paint and clean up and that kind of thing. But it was it ended up being essentially an empty canvas once we did a little bit of demo. But I mean, between every sort of roadblock at the city, I mean, then you've got. You've got the province to deal with as well, and then the province and the city sort of have to get aligned. So, the best comparison I can make is if you didn't have a business license in Vancouver and you walked in the day before you were supposed to open and said, "Hey, I forgot to get a business license," you'd probably go to the bottom of the pile, and that could cause you a big problem.
Yeah,
I walked into Port Moody and said, "Hey, I forgot my business license. We're supposed to open tomorrow," and they said, "Let me call Steve at the fire hall," and I walked out of there with a business license an hour later.
That's what happened to you?
Yeah. So we got to open on time, and I just gapped on getting a business license.
That's funny because like,
so they were just super helpful again. Yeah, shout out Port Moody City Council. Like, bless your heart, thanks for getting it done.
Well, that's awesome. Like, I don't see there's no like if you're trying to drive business in the community and you're trying to get people to be coming to your municipality and to the places that you offer for commerce, then like it doesn't make sense to like. Make things so strict with like the red tape that you see a lot in Vancouver, right?
Well, yeah, the mayor at the time was Mike Clay, and he was, he was not shy to say that the breweries were a great thing for Port Moody, and just the amount of discussions about Port Moody, and it was a beautiful place on its own and a beautiful community, people growing, small business. The addition of the breweries is certainly bringing more people into to know what Port Moody is.
Good
right?
job, Port Moody. Yeah. Well, gotta get out there.
I mean, but think about like how like our hospitality industry has kind of changed with the advent of the craft brewery scene over the last like. 15 years, I think he needs a beer there, Mickey, while they pour another beer. But think about like that idea because they've now, like, especially with Brewery Row here in Port Moody, but like, think about it, it's become like a hotbed for community involvement. I think that's one of the things that people always get frustrated nowadays with the way like Airbnb and stuff like this has kind of affected a lot of communities, is that you have a lot of transient people, whereas like stuff like breweries and stuff like this, where you have a community hotbed where people can join and go, it's kind of like the, instead of the coffee shop in the morning, it's kind of like the place where parents can take their children and they can go and they can hang out and they can have lunch. And like you said, you guys have a 100-seat patio. I bet you in the summertime, that's a pretty fun place to be.
It's full at noon, dogs and kids and people.
Dogs and kids. And like, think about
food
like
trucks
that,
and, yeah.
Think about like that community network and all the people talking and being together. And especially in our culture nowadays where the advent of the computer and the smartphone have kind of like maybe in some ways pulled people away from each other.
Right.
Breweries, I think, have had a really large role in kind of bringing communities together, especially smaller communities like Port Moody. Or, you know, if you take any smaller community in Ontario or even my city of Saskatchewan, it's a really nice way for people to get together and obviously try delicious beer, but also just kind of be together. And I think that's something that's very commendable in those markets. And I can see how it would be really something that's very gratifying for you guys as business owners.
Yeah, absolutely. And no knock on TVs, but I mean, you'll find that a lot of the little breweries, right, it's beer first and community and communal seating.
Yeah.
Right. So you end up, you know, asking people, you know, how they are, yeah, talking to people. There seems to be a lot of people talking to people. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I always get a kick out of that and just seeing, you know, the community come together and, hey, come sit over here, and sort of people moving over and, you know, being one with each other. So a community is a big part of what we are doing and the intentions of what we're doing.
You guys do barbecues?
You do food. Do you serve food?
No, they do.
We've got snacks. We've got you know, butchered items that come in and baked goods and that kind of thing. But we've got a food truck most days of the week.
Yeah. You guys have a list there, right? I think it's a listing.
There's a food truck schedule on our website all the time. But and then we do some pop-ups and stuff. And I mean, we've got plans to have our friends from Chicha come out and our friends from Romer's to come out. And a good friend of ours that's in the dumpling business, she's going to come out and host her own dumpling sort of pop-up and, you know, as well as just some great food trucks. I mean, Taco Fino's out often and some other great ones too.
What about like weird vegans like this kid over here?
We've had vegan food trucks, and I mean, a lot of that, I mean, you know, most places,
a lot of other people,
you know, most places will offer a vegan option as well. Absolutely. Our beer's all vegan.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, that's interesting.
Not all beer is, but
it's very true.
I'm surprised you didn't ask us.
Well, so that's one of my sort of, I am a vegan, but I do eat honey, and I will eat French fries that are deep fried in the same fryer as meat. So I do have certain concessions. Beer, obviously.
As I'm assuming you must in certain scenarios, but yeah.
But like living in Vancouver, you can usually get, it's fine to be a really well-fed vegan. But beer is one of
What kind of fryer oil are you using? Yeah. You know, not knocking it, but I could see that. I could see that being an arduous process.
Totally.
Can you go change your oil, please, for my one little order of fries?
Yeah, I asked the chef one time at the hotel that I work at, and he like gave me this look like, don't ever ask me that again. And I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, well, the worst he could say is no. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, but beer is one of those things where that's one concession. No. I will not discriminate against a beer if it's not vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too much beer to try.
Is that something that was a conscious choice, to make all your beers vegan?
Yes, it was. And I mean, there's processes that you have to do that. And
it's, you know, some little, like is it fish scales in like,
so some breweries, they'll use finings instead of filtering, right? Okay. We use filtering. But finings, they're essentially capsulized fish guts, and that clears the beer.
And
not everybody's using it. There's vegan finings as well that you can get. So, you know, those people would have to make a conscious effort, beyond sort of, you know, us where we've, got a filtration system that kind of just takes care of that for us.
Yeah, smart. You should have that on the bottle.
Probably.
On the box.
Do you think people?
Yeah, I gotta go. I got another thing on my list. Gotta go.
Do you think people care if the brewery came out and they didn't filter any of their beers and they were all just hazy?
Do you think people would care? I don't know.
Like if that was like their staple, that was like kind of their thing. We are going to be a brewery that just doesn't filter. Kind of like, because natural wine is a big thing now.
Right.
When natural wine, people like the idea that there's no clarification, there's no fining, there's no, you know, you're just getting natural wine.
Right.
Natural organic yeast. I don't know. Is that something that you think could work in the beer industry? Or do you think people just love their clear, crisp lagers and pilsners?
I think there's a time and a place for every beer. And I think depending on how you tell your story, if you can tell a good story and you can sort of communicate that to the people that want to hear your story, then of course there's a chance. You know, I'm not an expert in every sort of aspect of beer that could work and not work, but you know, it's just communication. Yeah. Like anything in life, right? The better that you communicate to the people you want to communicate with, the better chance you have at success. So maybe.
So I'm an IPA and stout guy. Mm-hmm. Mickey's a Pilsner guy. What do you?
That's not true. So I'm a Saison and Pilsner guy.
What are you? You have a beer, do you have a favorite beer style?
No, I used to. It's funny. I used to claim, "Oh, they're all my children. I like them all equally." And
what do you gravitate towards these days?
Dreamboat Hazy IPA is my favorite beer ever. Know. But if I'm not drinking Dreamboat and I'm not drinking Parkside, I'm at that point, I mean, my luxury beer at home is Reynald by Strange Fellows. I think I butchered that. I think purposely they say Reynard.
That's your favorite.
I think it's Reynard, but Reynard. I think they say it's Reynard, and I always say Reynald because I went to a French elementary school, and I want to roll my R a little
bit. That's their Udbrun.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big sour guy. You know, we make some kettle sours. We'll have a birthday beer coming out. That'll be a lovely kettle sour. And Vern and Hamish and the team have knocked out a couple of kettle sours that have been just dreamy for me. But Dreamboat's my, you know, somebody said, I said, they're all my children. He goes, which one do you play with the most? Dreamboat. Yeah.
I've thought about this, but I'm going to be the worst father. Cause I know I'm probably gonna have three children.
Yeah.
And, I know that I'm probably going to have a favorite.
You'll be a great dad. And you won't have a favorite. You'll love them
just
all.
Just let the other kids know.
No, my mom does it all the time. My mom's got five children. She comes with me all the time. She says it in front of my brothers and sisters all the time. She's like, Jamie's my favorite by far. Okay. He's the one that gave me the least trouble when he was born. He didn't give me any pain.
You know where you got your ego from. That's amazing.
I know. She says this right in front of him. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? And then they all give me
this. And
then
when you're not there, though, she says it to the other.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You tell them all they're special.
My mom just says, you're one of my three favorite children. I'm like, one, two. Yeah, there's three of us. Okay, good.
What breweries do you think are, what ones do you like really admire what they're doing? Are there certain beers? Obviously, you talked about Strange Fellows a little bit, but are there any ones on your radar that you think are really killing it right now? Certain beers that are really, really delicious right now?
Yeah, I mean,
you're
probably
really focused on.
Well, you just came from Ontario. Did you try some good stuff out there?
Oh, yeah, I sure did. Actually, traveling around Ontario and just some of the experiences I had in the taste rooms there and kind of learning the processes they go through and the roadblocks they go through of opening and that kind of thing.
I don't think you could even name a Toronto. I know Origins of Darkness, which was by, there's a really big one that just escaped me right now, but I really don't know any Toronto breweries.
Yeah, I mean, you probably know Collective Arts, and they've had quite a bit of success. And I got to spend some time with their staff, and they're lovely people. And Our Humans, an IPA for the People, took a silver for Best New England IPA in the country. And Collective Arts won gold. So it was funny because I was hanging out with their entire staff the whole weekend, and we both knew we won something in the category, and none of us cared who won what. We're just happy to be there. They took us on a couple tours to go see a couple breweries, and the Blood Brothers Brewery was really great. Mm. Bellwoods was really off the hook. And
actually, I've heard of Bellwoods, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, and you know, went to some other really great ones as well. Those two really stood out for me. Henderson as well was a fun place for sure.
And in BC?
BC, yeah. I mean, it's relationships, right? So, I mean, being in this community for a long time, I mean, I'll always have a soft spot for R&B, and I'll always have a soft spot. I mean, my friends at Strange Fellows and everybody on Brewers Row, like I'm drinking all the Brewers Row beer all the time. I mean, I'm out there all the time. So those ones really stand out. I mean, my very good friends own Main Street and...
Underrated. I think it's a very underrated brewery.
Agreed.
Yeah, all their beers are... above average.
Yeah, and nothing but love for Brassneck and Dave Varga, who used to brew at Red Truck when I was at Red Truck. He's at 33 Acres. So it's just a loving, you know, it's kind of like we're such a loving community. Now pick a few. And it's like, no, it doesn't necessarily work like that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I enjoy going to everybody's breweries and checking them out. I mean, you know, Nectarist at Four Winds is one of my favorites, right?
Award-winning.
Yeah, award-winning. We were all sitting at the same table together, and the guys are stealing Ochre Beauties, and, you know, there's just a lot of beautiful people doing beautiful things, so I like to, you know, I'm glad to have friends and friends in beer places, I think, because, man, I can slide that one in there.
That's good. I'm stealing that, actually.
One question I've always been curious about is, because you hear this, having worked in hospitality and working, especially behind a bar, how prominent and how important it is to have beers on tap. But is that kind of changing? Is it because it seems like the growth and evolution of people loving having bombers and the tall cans and like taking those, is it for as a business owner, is that still a driving force for you guys, is to get as many of your beers on taps in the market?
Or is it kegs out to
kegs
bars and stuff? Yeah.
Or is it like 70% of our business is kegs? And
I see so many cans now.
Because I feel like the can market has grown. I feel like it's a lot bigger.
Seems like that the way to me, but I don't know.
I think it's all important. I think, you know, for success of your brand and success of your business, you need to have different revenue, different areas of revenue that are coming. So whether it's kegs, or whether it's cans, or whether it's your tasting room, and whether it's merchandise, and whether it's, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. And I mean, you know, it's a competitive market and a challenging market, and, you know, cost of goods is a conversation that happens all the time. And so you've got to be on point with it all. Right. So, I think there's a really important aspect to having your beers on in certain places, for sure. I mean, you want people to get trial. And I mean, again, the amount of people, you guys are both extremely knowledgeable in beer, and you haven't been out to Port Moody. So if we weren't on tap down the street, we might not be here together, right? Like, we might not be sitting here together having a beer. So, you know, it is building community, and it is, you know, getting beers in hands is really an important thing, right? So people have a familiarity with you. And so wherever you're getting beers in hands, it's probably better for your company.
Okay. Yeah,
no, it's a diversity of,
right, but a time and a, you know, again, a time and a place. You want to be on at the right places that care about their menu and take care of their beer lines and take care of their food program and take care of their wine and the people are knowledgeable, and, you know, there's a care factor in it all that you want to be a part of. It's not about just running as much beer as you can through some pub. I'd rather sell less beer through a great place that we want to, you know, be affiliated with and work with. And yeah,
amazing. I like that. That's good. Mm-hmm. Are you gonna get it on at work?
We're so locked down with Stanley Park. It's fucking terrible. It's so bad.
Where are you working?
I work at the Fairmont at the airport.
Oh, gotcha.
But we just signed a deal with the Bats, which is now our taps are, we have four Stanley Park beers. We have the Day Trip Lager. We have their Amber Ale. We have their
Stanley Park's not bad.
Pilsner.
You just wish you had more variation, is what you're saying.
So the one actually tap that I have control of is Driftwood Fat Tug IPA.
Delicious.
That's great beer.
Yeah,
one of the OG Northwest IPAs.
Yeah, respect.
So hard.
Oh my god.
So it's so hard to take that off, because we have to have Stella and we have to have Guinness.
Again, friends in beer places, right? Ian at Driftwood's one of the nicest guys ever. So
yeah, no, totally. And then I wish I could just take off two of the Stanley Park, but we have this that deal that they signed where we have to have at least five of their beers on our seven taps at all times. It's absolutely ridiculous. And no, their beers aren't good. I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Time and a place for every beer. Finish the gross grind and have somebody throw one at you. And you'll say thank you. Yeah.
Exactly. They're not bad, but, you know, I'm judging on the gradient of like the best in the city, and they're definitely not there. But obviously, time and a place, like you said, for beers. I will say this, though. Their Day Trip Lager was very surprisingly good. It's like a hopped, citrusy, unfiltered lager. Only 5%. Super crushable. I think that's the best beer they make currently.
You can send Labatt an invoice for that. That was nice. That was good.
I tried with Fat Tug. I wanted to see if I could do it. I tried sitting down and having like 6 pints.
Yeah.
A Fat Tug?
Yeah.
Oh, you fell. He fell off your stool.
There's a gentleman who comes to my hotel all the time, and he would sit there and he would have like 5 or 6 Fat Tug IPAs, and he would just stand up and just walk away like totally normal. And I was like, wow, how does he do that? Like, it's a big beer.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see if I could do it once. I got to 4.
How'd that go? 4.
I got to 4.
That's it? Really?
Yeah. Huh. Oh no, by the fourth one I was just like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, 7.5% or whatever.
Well, it's not only that, but it's just like, it's,
what's the Dream Boat, by the way?
6.3.
I like that. But I can drink more of it.
I was just like, my friends were sitting with me and they're like, why are you doing this? But I love the beer.
Hey, it's good to challenge yourself, right?
I used to have when I was pouring drinks at Yaletown, I had a 9% beer, and I used to challenge people, and, you know, it was inappropriate. I wasn't serving it right at all, but it was, you know, hey, how many, it was a 9%. How many of these can you, he's like, I can drink 5 of them. I said, if you do that without turning into an asshole, I'll buy you a t-shirt. And without a doubt, 2 or 3 in, they fall off the stool or they start snapping at me for something. I'd be like, nope, that's it.
Yeah, done. Full price. You know,
and everybody they were with would always agree. Like, yep, he's done.
Yeah. All you gotta do is just sit there and shut up, and I would have bought you a t-shirt.
Yeah, well, that's that Belgian, you get into that delirium and everything. That's like, you know, like the Belgian triples, you get into that ABV. It's like deadly, man.
When I first started in this business, I went up to I was at some beer festival, and Delirium was there, and it had a giant sign that said best beer in the world. And I walked up, I was like, all right, let me see. And I tasted it, and I walked away, I smiled, I was like, that's a good beer. I couldn't really argue.
You know what?
It's actually a really good beer. It's really sweet, but it's really good.
A lovely beer.
What I would have done with you, you said, you were saying that that brewery in Toronto,
yeah,
was it Collective?
Well, I was hanging out with the Collective guys. The two breweries that stood out the most for me were Blood Brothers and Bellwoods.
Collective is the one that's beer came first and you guys came second. Right?
Correct, yes.
I would have told it was the Humans.
Humans, yes. And I pay for the people, yeah.
I would have just showed up with a six-pack of the Humans, and I would have looked at the owner, and I'd be like, all right, me and you, sit down. We're going to taste these. We're going to see which one's better. have a little fun with it.
I know. Well, I mean...
I know you don't care. I just think it's super good.
I like your saying of a beer for every occasion, because it's true. We get, and even I'm as guilty as anyone of getting into, I have a rotating top 10 Pilsners list that I'm always, updating.
Where's Don Pilsner on that list?
What's that?
Have you had a Don Pilsner lately?
I haven't. It's not on the list.
Great.
List. I know.
Hey, I saw lots of that every day.
I had it, I think, last year at some point, but I don't. It was before I sort of been doing this list. So
yeah, I blame you.
Yeah, getting into this whole ranking.
You can't get mad at me. I sell it every day.
No, I know. Yeah, Pilsner's a tough one too. It has to be obviously it's one of the in terms of brewing lagers and Pilsners.
Can I give you homework? Can you go to James Bar and have one in the next week or so?
Yeah. Okay,
and report back.
Totally allowed in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. But
am I allowed in there? Is that what you asked? Were you barred at some point?
But just the whole...
maybe, what?
the whole ranking of beers is, it's something that is sort of, it's kind of human nature to do. So it's good to hear that the scene is so, takes care of each other and supports everyone's products like that. So I'm going to try not to be so snobbish when it comes to my beers. But I will say that the Dream Poet is in my top three IPAs in the city right now.
Well, thank you very much. We'll take it.
But I'm going to have to ask you to stop giving Nick Black so much love. I mean, we just can't get his ego too big. So
if you're listening.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, the show, Nick Black.
Also the most humble guy. There'll be a package sent to my house from Nick saying, thank you for being so nice. He's that good of a guy. Yeah.
I just want you, getting back to basketball really quickly, I just want to know what position you played at Cap.
I was a small forward with a streaky jump shot and not very great handle.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. Throw my body around, dive into the crowd. Kind of guy. Yeah,
you guys are Sean Marion.
You guys are very much the same age, basically.
He's Sean Marion, except for the jumping. Except for the jumping. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I played in Garrett College 2 years, but I was a two guard, but I couldn't shoot. So go figure.
Who'd you play with there?
Randy Knorr.
I once claimed I was the Randy Knorr stopper, and Aaron Mitchell's a great guy. Randy Knorr was a great guy.
Was my favorite. If by chance you're listening to this podcast, I highly doubt it, but Aaron Mitchell was my favorite dude on that team. He was so nice.
He's such a nice guy. The scouting report on him was he's going right and then he's going right again.
Yeah.
Right, and we played them. They used to shit kick us.
They won the Nationals. Those Lewis Johnson
and Randy and Aaron and Dana was on that. There's a lot.
I had in practice to check Randy Knorr every fucking day in practice. I had to check Randy.
You got very good at basketball doing that.
No, I just got my confidence just got crushed.
Yeah. I was playing him in a 4-on-4 full court tournament, and I'm outscoring him, and it's a 25, and I'm just I'm the Randy Knorr stopper. This is great. And we're winning about 23. We're up a couple points. I'm like, we're gonna win this.
Yeah.
And then he kind of looked up at the scoreboard, and I didn't touch the ball again, and he scored seven straight points, and they won. I was like, I am nothing. Got
he
it.
He was the ultimate closer, the ultimate point guard closer, a la Kyrie Irving. But stockier and just powerful.
Oh, very, very brilliant basketball player. Absolutely.
Yeah.
yeah.
Jimmy's from Saskatchewan.
I have no idea who you guys are talking about. That's okay.
I don't think anybody does listen right now, but that was really fun. Thank you for indulging me.
This episode's going to be out probably within next week, so it'll probably be out early June. You guys are having your 3-year anniversary party on June 8th.
We are.
Yeah. So anybody out there who's...
There'll be cupcakes and everything. Cupcakes, beer releases, some live music, which is something that we don't do often or often enough, maybe. But
band or DJ?
A couple different things, yeah. You'll have to come see, perhaps. You'll have to travel out there and come see.
Is that a Sunday? What is that?
Saturday.
Oh, perfect. Anybody out there who's never been to Parkside or been to Brewery Row, check out Port Moody. Some great beers out there. Sam, we want to say thank you for this. This was wonderful. You brought us some great hats. Brought us some delicious beer. Look for Parkside. You can find it at a lot of venues here in the city. You can find it, obviously, pretty much anywhere where beer is sold. Yep. Come to the Fairmont Pacific Rim. We sell it there as well on trap. And Mickey's going to have to come by one day as well. Sam, thank you so much. This is pretty awesome. I'm always more forward to learn more about beer in the local scene. And, it's pretty cool.
We'll get you up. He's a wine guy, really. He does enjoy his beer, but he's really at heart a wine guy. So I'm trying to sort of show him some good stuff and get him more into the beer scene.
Very good.
Hey, I love
maybe, yeah, maybe I'll learn something about wine. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm trying, but it's so hard. It's hard.
And I just want to say thank you to all of you who have listened today. As always, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Luminary. Also, I just want to let you know that we're going to be launching our new platform. It's going to be called Midrange. You can find it at midrangevancouver.com, which we're going to be launching next week.
June 1st.
June 1st. Well, June 1st, hopefully, but it should be around there.
June 1st-ish.
We just have a few things to work out. But what we're going to be doing is we're bringing this podcast and Beats on Repeat, our sister podcast, and then Mickey's other podcast, Flux, together. And we're also going to be launching a new podcast. It's just going to be titled Midrange, where
we talk about mid-range Kawhi Leonard's mid-range jumper.
Yes. Exactly. We're going to be doing a lot of that. It's going to be me and Tristan doing that. It's going to be a weekly podcast where we just kind of discuss about things that are going on, current events in the city or in the world and whatever. And Midrange itself is going to be a new platform where there's going to be a lot of written content done by myself, Tristan, Mickey. We have some other people coming up there and collaborating with us. If you're interested in looking and learning about stuff that's food, culture, music, film, we're going to be giving you a lot of great stuff that's going on and our perspective and our opinions. So look for our launch date. Look for us when we pop that out for you guys. And we just want to say thank you for all the support. And
what was that website again?
It's going to be called Midrange, and it's going to be midrangevancouver.com.
Gotcha. It's not going to be called Midrange. It is called Midrange.
It is Midrange.
But if you go to www.midrangevancouver.com, you'll get all the content. Go now.
Go now.
Right after you listen to this podcast. Or
do both. Smartphones, or as you're doing. Can do that.
If you can type and listen, if you're a multitasker, then just do it. A lot of good stuff up there. If you're into NBA basketball, including Steph Curry and LeBron James.
I just wrote a big Steph Curry piece, by the way.
Is that right?
I asked the question, is he going to be a top 10 best player of all time?
He already is.
Ooh,
spicy.
He already is. I coached a kid at Kitts that ended up playing. He was his backup and ended up leading the entire NCAA Div 1 in free throw percentage. Nick Cochran. Word up, Nick. Unbelievable, though. Yeah, Steph Curry's already there. How could he not be there? Who's changed basketball more?
You're going to have to see where I put him.
So he's only 31. He could literally play like John Stockton style till he's like 42.
No, I get it.
So he could possibly...
He's going to have a fourth title, and you got him out of the top 10?
Yeah.
I'm out of for you.
It's a whole... You got to read the article. Yeah, he's got a ways to go like in terms of his stats, but obviously he's already the best shooter of all time.
Of all time?
So maybe even the best two shooters of all time in the same backcourt. Unbelievable.
Anyways, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Don't forget Steve Nash.